14. It's Romans 13, beginning of verse 8. Get kind of a run at this. We've looked at the 12th chapter a couple of weeks ago, and 13 begins the duty of a Christian toward government. We're going to kind of skip over that, but you know, we're looking at, you know, applications of Christian life. This is what Paul gets into, probably beginning with the 12th chapter. In fact, he has a tendency to do that in most of his epistles, is that he covers doctrine and then goes into the application of doctrine at the end of the epistle. He does this very specifically with the book of Romans. So after he's covered, you know, our responsibilities and how we should behave toward government, this context begins a general application of how we should approach, you know, people in general and the way we conduct ourselves. And there's a reason for it. It's kind of parallel with the thinking of Peter, you know, which was just read by Joe, the urgency of, because, you know, we never know when everything is going to be shut down and come to an end, and we're going to be facing God in judgment. So he begins by going, you know, owe nothing to anyone. Now, he kind of leads in with this to make a point. Now, I've heard preachers go, well, you know, Christians therefore, you know, shouldn't have mortgages, shouldn't have credit cards, you know, whatever. You know, worrying about all the kind of, you know, debt they might accumulate. And in some ways, that might be true. You got to be kind of smart with your, you know, finances. But the thing is that, you know, that's really not where Paul's going. In fact, if that were the subject, first of all, you can go to Matthew, the 5th chapter, verse 42, where it says, if anyone asks of you, give, and turn your way from someone who wants to borrow. So if borrowing and lending and all that kind of stuff is something that's wrong, then you're just aiding and abetting somebody who's doing a crime. So there's nothing wrong, you know, of going into, you know, some sort of agreement, you know, in order to, you know, make, you know, certain payments. Some things just almost demand it. But what he's saying is, once something is due, don't go beyond that. Okay, if you're supposed to pay by a certain date or make so many payments per month or whatever, well, that's fine. But if you start missing it, then you owe. That's a debt. And that's what you shouldn't be locked up yet. I mean, your words should be good, your commitments should be good, your contract should be good. But he's just using that to say, okay, don't go into debt in any way except to love one another. Okay, that's something you always owe. Something always goes beyond the point of expiration. There is no point of expiration. That you have to keep, you know, loving and loving and loving. And again, you know, we're hammering on this word love a lot. But it's, you know, understanding what's necessary, seeing what needs to be done, you know, committing yourself to doing it no matter what, you know, the problems, and getting the job done. Therefore, he goes, you know, if anyone loves his neighbor, he's fulfilled the law. Okay, so this debt of honor, and we know what Jesus said about a neighbor. Who is it? Anybody. Okay, so it's opening up our responsibility beyond just certain specific things or our brethren. Now, as we go into the world, you know, how do we conduct ourselves? And so this is the beginning of it. Now, what we're going to do here, or what Paul is doing, is actually two things. We talked about this morning about our personal growth. You know, that, you know, this is something kind of unique to our concept of Christianity. Many faiths don't get into this at all, although it's there in abundance. This reconstruction of, you know, the character, the inner, you know, being, and stuff like that. So this is part of it that Paul's going to get into. But interestingly, it's wedded with another thing that people have a tendency to overlook in Christianity, and that's the law. They go, "Well, we're no longer under the law. You know, we're just freed up all over the place." What they don't realize is, like Jesus said, I didn't come to get rid of the law and the prophets. I came to fulfill them. And what he's done is meld the most of the law of the Old Testament with the grace of Jesus Christ. You know, we covered that last week. But in this case, we see this law and a reconstruction of ourselves put together. Yeah, and it's interesting the way Paul does it. So in this essence of love, you know, and especially, you know, loving our neighbor, then he goes into, now it says, you know, this is a fulfillment of really law. There's no definite article there. But he does use the law of Moses as a sort of guideline or an illustration of what he's talking about. Now notice he's using the second table of the law. You know, the first four commandments have to do with our relationship with God. The last six have to do with our relationship to other people. But he's only going to use four of those. You know, four is a number of completeness. He doesn't have to go any farther, but he does something else with here. But he goes, you know, in this scenario of loving our neighbor, okay, that is, do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not covet. Okay. It's interesting in our day and age when people want to get rid of the Ten Commandments. Now, what about those are okay to get rid of? I mean, what are you really saying? Is it okay to murder? Is it okay to commit adultery? Is it okay to steal? What are you opening society up for? What Paul says, if you want a society to work, these things, these structures have to be in place. I mean, would you not want a neighbor who basically lives on the rules of, okay, as I look at you, I'm not thinking of murder. I'm not thinking of, you know, committing adultery with your wife. I'm not thinking of coveting or stealing from you. You know, wouldn't you care to have that as a neighbor? In fact, the premise of this country is based on that. If we can get everybody instructed in those rules and understand those are the rules and they're accountable to God because of those rules, then they don't need law. Okay? They're law unto themselves in the sense of, you know, they monitor their own behavior. Boy, that really cuts down on police forces, you know, if everybody was like that. But that's not the way it goes. Anyway, so he goes through these things. Now, something that's usually not thought of, and you would get a lot of negatives here. This is a list of negatives, and we're going to have the second verse to the end, kind of some negatives. But for every negative, and most people don't think of it this way, but a Christian should, okay, there's a corresponding positive. If I'm not supposed to commit adultery, then what is my responsibility? Okay. To make sure that relationships are safe, secure, you know, that my neighbor has nothing to feel that he has to worry about. You know, building up more positive energy going. If we're not supposed to murder, then, you know, can we, you know, build up relationships where people realize that that's the farthest thing from our mind, and it should be the farthest thing from theirs. You're working in positive directions, and you can go through this. And we talked about, you know, it's melding it with an inner thing. I mean, one of the things that are listed here, thou shalt not covet, that's an inner thing. That's something that has to be squelched on the inside. I mean, when Jesus says, okay, you looked at thou shalt not murder, what I'm telling you is, even if you hate your brother, it's, you know, that's what you're going to be judged by. So the Jews thought, well, as long as you didn't do the outside, I can still hate. And Jesus is going, no. You know, the inner thinking is laid bare to God. And he's going to judge you for it. And one of the Ten Commandments, I'll show you, that's an inner thing. That's something that's part of the thinking process. So in our behavior with our fellow man, God is laying out some good guidelines. And then he goes, and if there's any other, you know, commandment, let it be summed up in this saying, love your neighbor as yourself. How do you want to be treated? You know, what is good policy? All this.
How would you like a perfect world?
Give that to other people. Okay. Or he even adds to that, next verse, love does no wrong to a neighbor. Okay, even as he puts it in the negative, Okay, how would you make it a positive? How would you make sure that there's no wrong in other people's lives? How would you behave yourself in order to build up other people's, you know, lifestyles and hopes and purposes and everything else? So it puts us out there as to be kind of active in the community. It's not just a sequestering of certain, you know, actions. It's actually being proactive and to start directing society, and that's part of our responsibility to government, you know, being a part of government. In fact, we have a very unique position in government in our society. No other, you know, hardly any other time in history have men been their own rulers. I mean, we asked this before when it says render to Caesar the things are Caesar. Who's Caesar in this country? We the people. Okay. They keep talking about those in Washington as our royalty. They're not our royalty. They're not supposed to be. They're supposed to be our servants. Okay. We the people are supposed to run the country, especially as Christians, as an obligation, you know, to be a part of this, to make sure that, you know, things are legislated properly according to the will of God, if at all possible. So he goes there and he says, okay, and this do, okay, it's, you know, everything that he's referred to, this do. But then he goes on the reason for it. You know, you may go, well, that's kind of nice stuff, but, you know, is there any imperative why it started right away? And he goes, yeah, there is. Knowing the time, that is, you know, the season, the period, you know, whatever, you know, they knew how tough was it back then. Every point in history has its seasons and periods of time. But even more so, knowing that we're nearing the end of whatever it is. Okay? Knowing the time that already is the hour that we shouldn't awake from sleep. Now, the sleep here is sort of a euphemism, but it's telling us not to be lazy, not to be lackadaisical, not to be indifferent. Okay, we got to get out of that and start being, you know, more actively involved as Christians into remaking the world. Okay? This is the way we love our neighbor. You know, when we build up our family, when we build up our community, when we build up our government, you know, it's a way of looking out for everybody around us. And we have that responsibility. And then he puts it this way, he said, because our salvation is nearer than when we first believe. Yeah. I mean, whenever you got started, you know, there is set, we know Acts 17:30, there is set in history a day of judgment. It's there. Okay? Now, we don't know where it is. Of course, you don't know your day of death either. I mean, do you know when you're going to die? Okay? But every day you're getting closer to that day, wherever it is. You know, the time element is shortening. So it becomes sort of an imperative that as we're running out of time, we need to get things fixed now. Now, when Paul goes on and adds to this and he goes, you know, for the night is almost gone and the day is at hand. Now, it seems like it's imperative in his time. But it's been 2,000 years since then. Is Paul a false prophet? No. It's just that we all have to speak of it this way. In the sense there is an urgency because we don't know when the cutoff date is. Even Christ doesn't know that. In fact, that's what he tells, you know, Peter and the apostles, Acts 1:7. It's not for you to know the times and the seasons and all this kind of stuff. And as well as read by Joe, you know, from Peter's viewpoint, you know, it's going to come like a thief in the night. Okay? But there's two possibilities. One, it might be the second coming, the day of judgment. Okay? And that may come while you're still alive. Okay? So you don't know when that is. So while you're still alive, you know, work, you know, with all your might toward it. But you know, even if it's cast off into another 2,000 years, you've still got a day that you have to meet, the day you're going to die. And that's also, that day of judgment. Okay, we've covered that. You know, this time frame. You know, time gets lost. You know, when you step out of this realm, you know, it means nothing to God. In fact, you could be stepping in the same day of judgment that David and Moses and Abraham all are. Okay? So it really, you know, could be the day of judgment for you when you die. And again, you don't know when that day is. Okay? You may say the probability is, you know, from the actuarial charts that I've got to like 75 years of age or 80, you know, and a lot of times you start worrying because, you know, the amount of you've set by for retirement, you know, if after retirement goes into the hundreds or something like that, you start panicking, am I going to have enough money to survive on? You know, but what if it happens the other way? There's so many things going on that we're not guaranteed. Next segment, next heartbeat, next breath. So, you know, there's a deadline there. Yeah, and another imperative. So it's time, Paul says, to put, like we talked about this morning, to put off, you know, the deeds of darkness. Now notice the correlations between night and darkness and day and the other, you know, all these things that Paul is playing. He goes, okay, time to put off the deeds, and we covered those, you know, pretty much this morning. But then, in fact, we're going to hit some more here. But then he goes, put on the armor of light. And that's to help and to prepare. You know, it's almost, you know, when Paul gets into the armor of the hoplite, in fact, that's a Greek word that means tools or weapons. And so the Roman hoplite, the soldier, you know, he's decked out with all the weapons. That's why they call him a hoplite. And sometimes, you know, because we have the image of the soldier, we kind of lose track of what they represent. So without going through the armor, think about, you know, what the Christian is supposed to arm himself with. Truth. Righteousness. Faith. Salvation. Okay? Preparation of the gospel. Okay? And the sword of the Spirit. Word of God. Okay. These are the things which you're supposed to be well versed with. In fact, if you kind of equate it to like a knight in the Middle Ages, when these guys were decked out in armor, when a knight got his new armor, he put it on and it stayed on because it was overwhelming in weight. Okay, if you kind of pushed him over, you know, he'd fall flat on his back and he'd probably lay there for 2 weeks, you know, flipping like a turtle trying to get over. So he wore it to bed, he wore it every day, he never took it off until he got used to the weight. And then after he got used to the weight, he had to get used to fighting this weight. And so he had to go through all the battles of learning the sword, the shield, whatever else weapon he had to have. So with a Christian, God is not expecting us to jump in right away. When you become a new Christian, you are considered a babe in Christ. You got a lot to learn. But once you reach maturity and you get used to the armament and you know how to use it, it's time to go out and serve the purpose. Okay. Therefore, he goes, behave properly as in the day. And the word behave there, I like the literal term, walk. Because walk means you're engaged in doing something. It's a constant. You know, walk is in the light. You know, when people are in the day, now we're going to get into a little list here, another, you know, don'ts. Okay? And you'll notice what people, even though it's getting part of our society and accepted, people still don't do it, you know, unless rarely. If they're getting carried away, it's usually at night. It's usually in basements, closed up bars, out in the middle of the desert, you know, in big parties and stuff like that, you know, sequestered away from, you know, culture, society, normal daily living. You know, even if it's at night, it's usually, you know, not in the middle of the street. So we understand that there are things, you know, men, even by common sense, even if they're engaged and consumed by this stuff, you know, they're not putting themselves over totally to it. But for the Christian, you know, it's not being hypocritical. It's not, you know, this is the way we walk in the day. This is the way we walk in the night, too. This is the way we walk always. And then he puts it in a negative way. But again, flip it in the positive. Not in carousing and drunkenness. Okay, we have three sets, you know, of twos here. Okay, the carousing is drinking parties, raves, office parties, whatever. These are the kind of things where people make us kind of a social drinking place. And they set up situations where if you go a little bit beyond, you know, it's acceptable until you really get out of hand. I used to not go to the office parties when I was working out in San Diego because people would tell me about where they ended up. I mean, when you get so drunk, you know, you rip the clothes off the boss's wife, you know, or everybody takes off their clothes and goes jumps in the pool. You know, I go, I really don't even want to hear about this stuff. But this is, you know, then they all come back and everything's fine. Okay. But you put yourself in these situations, and then you go to this is why the crowds put yourself in these kind of situations, and then it goes to extreme of drunkenness. And then all the inhibitions are gone. Okay, Christian doesn't walk in those realms. Okay, not in sexual promiscuity and sensuality. Okay, we're in a culture where it's perfectly acceptable to do a lot of things. In fact, the physical intimacy is now termed, you know, physical or consenting stuff. You know, they give it different terms to make it okay. And you can get sucked into them. It's okay. You know, everybody's doing it. It's the norm. But it's not the norm with God. Okay? This is what you have to keep forward. It's not the norm with God, and you're going to be judged for it. In fact, what we need to do is show people that it's not the norm. This is our responsibility. I mean, a lot of the things people are doing is, you know, what he talks about, that's the extreme, the sensuality where the whole life is lived. You know, trying to accentuate, you know, the shows that are seen, the music that they listen to, man, the piercings, you know, a lot of the piercings that they do on the body are in erogenous zones. And so the person is constantly aroused. The physical becomes the main focus of life instead of the spiritual. And our job is to re-educate people out of this into, you know, a more positive, you know, life purpose and functioning with one another. I mean, if you think it's all physical, you have a tendency to be rude. You have to be a tendency to, you know, be politically incorrect, you know, harassing, you know, up for lawsuits, you know, because in your mind you thought it's all perfectly well and good, not realizing not everybody thinks that way. Not everybody thinks that way. And they'll get offended by it. I recall working on the Vintage and the rules, you know, around construction guys all day long and stuff. But I was surprised because the construction crews were different than other construction crews, you know, I've been around all my life. You know, usually the coarseness of the language and loud music and when they leave, you know, it's littered. But on the Vintage, you know, the language was watched, no music was turned on. At the end of the day, the whole work site was cleaned up. Why? Because you're working among millionaires. And even rich people have values, and some of them are religious. And you didn't want to offend them. You really don't want to offend a $1 million client. And so you clean up your act. Okay? It was just common sense. Okay? So how do you interrelate with people? When you walk among them, do they feel comfortable? I mean, they shouldn't feel like you're holier than thou or, you know, uptight religiously or something like that. You can get it across in a very even keel, you know, in a very positive way. Okay? And let them know that there's a more mature way of approaching things. And then finally, again, you know, not with strife, jealousy. We're not jealous of people, you know, what they have. If the neighbor, you know, we're not keeping up with the Joneses, if they want a boat or an RV or whatever, good, okay, beautiful, you know, show it to me, let me see your new truck, open the, I have the foggiest idea what I'm looking at, but yeah, it looks cool, clean, you know, whatever. Go for it. No strife. I mean, what's the most important thing in this life? You know, your service to God. Does anything else matter that much? Nothing provokes you. Not easily provoked. Okay. Then go back. What was that? Putting on that armor? Putting on Christ. This is the last verse. Putting on Christ. Okay, that's putting on the armor. The quintessential idea of putting on all of his attitudes, his thinking, the way he behaves and stuff. Put on Christ. And make no provision for the flesh, you know, concerning its lusts. Now this is, we talked about helpful tools. We've got a couple of books on addictions, on how to help people out of addictions. And one of the things is not making provision for the flesh. Okay. As you build your life around you, build protection. Fortify. Make your home your castle. Okay. So don't provide for anything that would lead you into an addiction, or if you're trying to crawl out of an addiction, that would help foster that. I mean, obviously, if you're an alcoholic, you don't hide any liquor in the lamp fixtures or the laundry bag or something where you can get to it. Clean the house out. Same with any pornography. Get rid of everything. All the literature, all the pictures. Cut off anything that's coming in the mail. Don't allow anything that would set you off. And that could be a lot of different things. You're going to have to figure it out. Each person sometimes his own little hole that he's crawled into. It's hard to follow everybody down their own little rabbit hole. But God has given us the same ladder that fixes in all the holes. Help people get out of them. So don't make any provision. And that could be some things you never think of. When a girl loses her innocence in the back seat of a car, what was she doing in the back seat to begin with? She set herself up. Okay. For the guy also to get there and go, well, it got out of control. No, it didn't. You kept going to the brink until you hit the downward slope, but whose decision was it to get that far? Don't make provision for the flesh. I mean, it's your, what does Paul say to the Corinthians? Flee immorality. I mean, James says, you can stand up to the devil, but there are certain things, because, we are susceptible in the flesh. The flesh is, the spirit's willing, the flesh is weak. So when you see something that you know have an effect on the flesh, don't sit there and go, I'm a superman when it comes to that. No, put on your running shoes and head out of there as fast as you can. Okay? Protect yourself. Protect those around you. Okay? And a lot of this is what we're doing, knowledge of what God wants us to know about. For young people to say, I don't know what's, I don't see anything wrong with that. Of course you don't. Of course you don't see anything wrong with it. You're not educated enough. You're not mature enough. You haven't a life experience. This is why God gave you parents to let you know what's right and wrong. Listen to them. Okay? Don't make provision for the flesh. Okay? And this is what we're here for also. This is one of the other things. You have to help each other. Anybody here that didn't come in out of the world? Anybody here? What would Jesus say? Anybody here that's got a rock in their pocket willing to throw it? Without sin, cast the first stone. Take your best shot. Okay. In some ways, we understand what God's talking about. Some way or the other, we've got a clue already by our life experiences, by the things we've seen, even if we didn't do it, we've seen what's happened to our friends. Knowing people, that just, we're doing the wrong things. Drug overdose, neighborhood, neighbor of mine, next door neighbor, young man with the service, blew his brains out, basically with drugs. People that I've known that, got too much alcohol, got in a car, nobody told them, stepped in to be their friend, didn't love them as a neighbor, let them get in the car and wrap themselves around a telephone pole. And then you got to hold their hand while they're crying. Oh, how could this happen? Yeah. How could it not have happened? Okay. God has given us the church in order to help one another. You know, to warn each other, to admonish one another, to counsel one another, to pray for one another, to help each other in any way we can. So if you have any needs, please let us know. Okay. We understand and we want to help. The invitation is extended. Why don't you come and stand and sing?